More than 10,000 children are in foster care in Ohio during any given month, and there aren't nearly enough foster homes available for them. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me in this recorded interview to discuss the foster care crisis and what it takes to be a foster parent are Beach Acres Parenting Center Manager for Foster Care and Adoption, Rochelle Bowling, and Foster and Respite Care parents, Tony and Danielle Seymour. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Great to have you in the studio. Tony, you fostered 8 children in 10 years. What inspired you and Danielle to become foster parents?
That's a great question.
is that one for Danielle? You better take that one.
I think she kind of had the hunch first to do it, but we kind of made the decision together to, for me, it was kind of just, it was feeling that need of a gap that was there for, you know, kids all over, you know, for us, the city of Cincinnati and how we jumped in there, understanding that there's kids that are out there that are going through some tough stuff, some tough times, and not just the kids, but parents as well. And they really need people to hop in and fill that gap for the kids. They need that stability. And even for the parents need the ability to, you know, depending on the time of life that they're in, to be able to get some help as well to get their lives back on track whenever it kind of seems like they've derailed themselves. So for me, it was, you know, really, I guess you could say, feeling a calling to step into that gap and to be a help.
Yeah. Danielle, how old have the children been that you've fostered typically?
We have fostered kiddos from 6 months all the way up to 14 years old.
That's quite a range. Is there a big difference in the needs of kids depending on their age?
Yes. It's definitely meeting the kids where they're at for the age that they are. You know, they, as the older they are, they have experienced more of life. And so it's really being able to adapt to meet each kid individually where they're at.
Yeah. Were you nervous at all, Tony, when you started?
Yes. Well, I think, you know, we felt the need was out there, but and we had talked about it, and we had even started looking at dates that we could start our foster care licensing path to go down. And there was some hesitancy there, and I think we even let some of the dates slip by. And our one biological daughter that we have at the time, I forget how old she was.
She was 7.
Just gave us a nudge of, hey, mom, hey, dad. I mean, she was 7 years old at this point in time. She's like, you know, we need to foster kids. And she's like, would I be the oldest? She's like, no, we need to be willing to take in any kids that come around, whether they're older or younger, whether they're tall or short, whether they're thin or big, or, you know, this was all her, a 7-year-old who was saying this. And so that kind of gave us the little kick in the backside that we needed. And so we kind of went out and actually found some training that was occurring, I think, the next weekend.
Well, actually, we were supposed to be in training that weekend, but we dragged our feet. Yeah. And we didn't tell anything about this to our daughter at the time. And so we kind of were like dragging our feet, and it was like the wake-up call of like, hey, we were supposed to be in training. So the next 2 weekends, we were in training.
Yeah.
Wow.
The words of advice from a 7-year-old. Yeah. So.
Yes. Out of the mouths of babes.
Yes.
So, Rochelle, how much need is there for foster parents? How many children are in the state's custody and waiting for placement?
So in the state's custody, as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, at any point in time, there's more than 10,000 kiddos in care. I will say that the work we primarily do is in the greater Cincinnati area. I can tell you at the end of April, there were 2,200 children that were in care, and there were 700 to 800 foster families or foster homes.
And that's in Hamilton County. Like what area
I would say
are you
the surrounding area,
Southwest
mostly.
Ohio.
Yeah, Southwest Ohio would be a great way to put it. Mostly Hamilton County, but you know, if you look at like Warren, Butler, Claremont, that kind of area too. But still, the counties that are serving Hamilton County, and so there's just not enough homes in general. But then when you couple that with the fact of homes that are willing to take older children, like Danielle and Tony, homes that have siblings. You know, sometimes we get referrals for 3, 4, 5 siblings. Most people don't just have that many extra beds in their home. So that is an added complicating factor. things that Danielle mentioned too, children with trauma. Every child that comes into care, they're in care for a reason, and that's connected to trauma. And that trauma leads to higher needs. And so families who have the skills and the ability to care for children that have those higher needs, and I would really even just say, like, the bravery to even give it a try and to jump into it, you know, sometimes it can be a scary thought to care for someone else's child, and again, to care for children that have some of those needs. But those are some of the challenges that come along when you look at, you know, families that are doing this work. And it's hard work. Let's not ignore the fact that it is hard work. You are taking care, again, of children that have trauma-related needs, higher needs, and you're really putting your heart out there and yourself to love these children and to form those bonds and those attachments. And again, knowing that the reality is that reunification is that primary goal, and it truly is. And as an agency and our foster families, we are there to support that goal as much as we can. And so it's a hard job, but the need is very real. Again, just looking at the data and the statistics and the number, yeah. The need is very real.
So, Rochelle, how unusual is it for foster parents to have biological children who are already in the home, like Tony and Danielle do, and to have those kids nudge them to say, hey, Mom and Dad, we need to get on this? I mean, obviously, your daughter sounds like a very special young person, but how common is that to have that dynamic, to have biological kids already there as part of the mix?
I don't think it's uncommon at all. We have families of a variety of orientations. We have lots of families that are in relationships, partners married, that already have children in the home. We also have a good number of foster families that are single parents that rely on, you know, additional support, that kind of thing. And families that have children in the home already, or that have biological or adoptive children in their home, and families that don't. So there's a wide variety of families that we support.
You talked about the need, but my understanding is the number of foster parents is dropping, even though the need is going up. Tell us about those trends.
Yeah. So again, I think a lot of that goes back to the higher needs that we see of the children that are in care, and just the demands of foster parenting in general. You know, there's visits that are very important to maintain because, again, that goal of being reunification, but that means that children need to spend time with their parents. And so, you know, one of the challenges is you have to get them to those visits every day or every week, I mean. And, you know, higher needs also mean perhaps more therapy appointments and things like that. And you're doing a lot of transportation there. So there can be those challenges and things to balance. But again, it's a very hard job to do and to maintain that resilience. Nationwide, 30 to 50% of foster families close in 2 years.
Close, you mean they just stop?
They close
accepting.
Their license. So they will retire or, you know, close their license. Now, I will say about our particular agency is we're very mindful of that. And we try to be very mindful of the support that we provide foster families with our social workers, intentionally having low caseloads so that our social workers are available to our families. You know, on-call support that we have there, building community around them. One of the things I always say when I talk to other foster families is, like, if I were to say to, you know, just the average person on the road, how many people do you know are parents? They would say, you know, a lot of people, right? Like, my parents are parents. I might be a parent. My siblings are parents. My friends, my community, whatever. If I say to someone, how many people do you know are foster parents? They might know one or two. And the experience of parenting biological children and the experience of parenting children that are in care, it's very different experiences. And unless you have a community around you that can support that, that can identify with that, it can be really hard and it can be really challenging. And so being intentional about creating those supports and those connections, again, just so our foster families know this is something they can do. It really is something they can do. And we're here to help them along that journey, to walk with them. Because it's important for them, right? Like they put in work to get licensed. They have, you know, pre-service training to go through. They go through a home study interview that is very invasive. It's a process. So they put the work in, right? But also our kids need people who can provide safety and stability for them. And that's what we're looking for and what we need.
So you just said a large percentage of people nationwide, of foster parents nationwide, drop out after within 2 years, I think is what you said. Why is that? Do you all have thoughts about that? Danielle, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I'll weigh in on that. So, I mean, just speaking from experience, after our first placement, we actually did take a year or two gap because we realized really fast that you could not parent biological children the same way that you could parent foster kiddos or kiddos from hard places and trauma. And so we learned about TBRI, which is trust-based relational intervention, and that really saved the way that we parented. And it, then we, you know, incorporated it with biological kids and like just how we parented. But once we figured out how to parent with a trauma lens and kiddos with these really big behaviors that could last anywhere from 10 minutes to 2 hours.
It changed. When you say big behaviors, what do you mean by that?
Like the trauma,
the screaming, yelling,
you know, you're trying to maybe correct them from lying and like 45 minutes, an hour later of an emotional outburst, just a lot of emotional dysregulation. And so like maybe even the difference between where before with our biological, we would have done a timeout versus now we'll do a time in, which is instead of sending them away, which then could cause more rejection. It's okay, let's sit on the couch together for this time in instead of a timeout.
Yeah. It's, I mean, touching on that, it's, you know, really looking with the whole trauma-informed care and approach to it, it's really looking beyond just those behaviors and figuring out, okay, well, what is really the root cause of that behavior itself? And it's the, a lot of it is the trauma that's behind it. It's what the child has been through previously in the past, and understanding that. And through that, that changes your lens of how you're looking at it and the way that you do parent. And so, you know, Danielle touched on the, you know, us taking that little break and us getting closer as a couple, us getting closer as a family with her biological daughter, and kind of reframing in our minds, okay, what does this really look like whenever we're dealing with kids of trauma? And that's where I think from that point on, we really dove into different trainings of trauma-informed care and looking at that trauma approach to it, which really helped us.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's that, like he said, it's looking at the need behind the behavior. It's not that they're doing it to be manipulative. It's their survival. And so it's meeting them and finding out what is that, if it's attachment connection. What's that need behind their behavior?
Yeah. We're talking in this recorded interview about the number of children in foster care and the critical need for foster parents. Was that whole thing different for your biological daughter? I mean, to see those big behaviors as you describe them, to really understand how to deal with that as another kid in the household?
It was, it was an adjustment some, but we also learned like we would have to put a code word in. So like we would have maybe have said pineapple. And so like when we had other kids in the house, like she also helped take the lead in knowing, you know, it really expanded her worldview too. And like I said, we would do a pineapple and she would even step in to take the other kids out so they're not spectators of what's happening in the room, to be able to give that space. And also like she might put headphones on the other kiddos so that they're not hearing the emotional outburst. So it really did help shape her into the person that she is today.
How old is she now?
She just turned 18 and she graduated.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yes.
That's exciting. Well, Rochelle, are you seeing more and more children entering foster care with more complex needs?
Oh, I definitely think the needs are getting more complex. Again, just looking at those, and they've touched a lot on the trauma related behaviors, but those trauma related behaviors that lead to, as they put it, those big behaviors. Especially when you get into like school age children, children that are a little bit older, sometimes even children that are a little bit younger. What we've learned too, as research has advanced and things like that, is the impact of trauma that starts, you know, even in the womb with children. And so I think there's been more attention and more recognition of noticing what those behaviors are and how they're related to trauma and just what they bring out. Also, though, I think it helps us learn how to manage those things and how to learn and how to help children, too, to work through those. But it does take a lot of work to get through them. Mm-hmm. But being aware of them first and really seeing what that is and recognizing what they are.
Yeah. Rochelle, you mentioned that Beat Shakers works to make sure social workers are available for consultations, you know, really there for the foster mm-hmm. parents they're working with. What other kind of support is available for foster parents, especially those who are caring for kids with really complex needs or maybe if they just need a break because sure. being a parent is hard no matter what, but especially complicated if you're caring for a child with really complex needs.
Yeah, definitely the availability. Our on-call workers, you know, if there's a situation that comes up at 2 a.m., you know, they can call our on-call social worker all the way to the director of the program is available. Additional to that, one thing that we highly, highly, highly encourage is respite care. So we have some families, some people that come to us that say, hey, we can't quite be foster care providers. You know, our life just doesn't allow for that. But maybe we can do respite care and we can help on weekends or something like that because families do need a break. They need to have that time to recover and to just kind of rejuvenate and to make sure that they're touching base with one another and refilling that their cups, too, to be able to do that.
Danielle, you and Tony adopted two of the children you fostered over all those years. Did you have that in mind as a possibility going in? And then what kind of supports, if any, are available once you've adopted? I've heard there are fewer supports available for adoptive parents than foster care parents.
There are supports, yes, once they're adopted. I mean, we've had a great family support, first of all. And so there's always that. But also when you do adopt, I mean, it depends on if they're having mental health needs. You know, there is always Ohio Rise that does have some support. And if, like, you need respite, they do also help support and provide that that respite. And then, Tony, do you know of any other ones?
I mean, those are some good ones. I think for us, probably for us, what's really helped out as well, even through adopting kids, is we still have that world of foster care mm-hmm. and other foster parents that we still lean on for support, and they reach out to us. It really is a community that we've made some great relationships through. So that's kind of helped us through foster and adoption as well. And we know several other foster parents that have also adopted as well. So leaning on them in terms of, hey, how did you navigate this aspect of care or whatever system or any programs that you're getting assistance and help from has really helped us as well.
Yeah. Did you know going in that you might want to consider adopting children you fostered?
Yeah, we definitely were open to it, but also really knew that that was not our main goal. But if a kiddo needed a forever home, we were willing to provide that. But our goal was obviously reunification and supporting the families.
Yeah. Rochelle, I've heard from other people, I guess, and maybe the other people have been talking about other things, that foster parents have more maybe financial support than adoptive parents get. Is there a difference there in terms of how the state helps financially foster parents versus adoptive parents?
Yeah, the structure is set up, you know, through contracts as foster parents. And so there are set amounts that are predetermined based on level of care. Those are foster care terms that we use, level of care. Once a family adopts a kiddo that they go through a process with the county as they're preparing for that. And that's something that they work out privately between them and the county. Mm-hmm. And so there is a process and a structure that is set up for sure with that. And oftentimes it is different, but that's a foster family to a county situation.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Did you want to add anything to that, Danielle?
I was just going to say that, you know, you do go through something called negotiations afterwards, which sounds very terrible, talking about kiddos in that way. But then, you know, at that point, that is between, it's that next step of leading towards adoption. Mm-hmm. You know, and the county does support in helping the kiddos with Medicaid, and there is a small amount for the kiddos.
Yeah. Okay, so four of the children you fostered were reunited with their biological parents, as I understand it. Two of the others that you fostered were adopted. They had other adoption placements. For the kids who were reunited with their biological parents, what were your feelings around that? I know you said when you started there was kind of this nervousness about, oh, I could basically fall in love with these kids and then have to give them up.
It's a range of emotions that you have, especially for us, for the kiddos that did reunify. We had, trying to think through them, some of them we have for, you know, several months long. So they do become, you know, part of your family. You take them on family vacations, if you're able to, you know, you celebrate birthdays, celebrate holidays. They become part of the extended family. I know for us, every single child that we've had that has come to us, our extended family on both sides has really embraced them and brought them in, which has been, you know, just really great for us. But then through that, I think what kind of helped us a little bit too with reunification of the kids that did go back is building a relationship when able with the biological parents. And through it, you know, trying to be a support for them as well. You're supporting their children, but also, you know, whenever they need guidance or they have questions. I think we've actually dealt with some biological parents who came to us about questions on how to handle their own kids and parent their own kids. So it is definitely a mixed bag of emotions up and down. So,
and we've also stayed in contact with some of the kiddos that have reunified and supported them, like he had said. And, you know, if anything ever like did happen or they came back in care, they were also able to then come back into our home.
Yeah. So, Danielle, what do you think it really takes to be a foster parent? If somebody's listening to this and thinking, oh, I'm kind of interested, but I'm scared. I don't know if I can do it. What does it really take?
You know, we were scared too. And, you know, it's a big leap, but it's needed. So kind of like I had said before, it's like, why not? Somebody needs to love them and provide that safety. And, you know, if you like one, have a community of people with you. So as well, have some extra respite providers. But if you don't have any, then reach out to the foster community and get to know some of the other foster parents. Be willing to, you know, put yourself out there. But I also, what it take to be a foster parent is a willing heart and a bed and a home and someone who is willing to say yes, even though it might be scary and you might not know what's going to come of it. But just know that there is also a great community of foster parents that if there is a need and you put it out there on the Beach Acres Facebook page, like somebody usually fulfills that need pretty fast. And that we're like, there's a support system willing to be there to help you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're not walking, if you decide to be a foster parent, once you become a foster parent, you're not walking alone through the journey. Mm-hmm. There is that support group there. So
if you're willing to take that step.
If you take that step.
Well, I've been talking with foster and respite care parents Tony and Danielle Seymour and Beach Acres Parenting Center Manager for Foster Care and Adoption, Rochelle Bowling. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.